You have the additional thanks of the court for accepting this appointment and ably representing Mr. Boris.
Thank you.
Case is taken under advisement, as I stated, and we will proceed to the fifth case, Ruan versus the NLRB.
Morning. May it please the court. This case involves a challenge to the NLRB's decision to count a ballot in a representation election. Ruan's position is that the ballot should not have been counted because the intent of the voter simply cannot be ascertained by viewing the marks that the voter placed in both boxes of the ballot. In fact, the determination of this case hinges on this court's inspection of the actual ballot in question, and therefore, pursuant to agreement of the parties and the court's order dated June 17th of this year, the panel should consult the original ballot. That's in the record at Joint Appendix 26.
We have that.
Thank you, Your Honor. This was a vote conducted by mail, a mail ballot vote. It was not an in-person secret ballot vote as the NLRB might typically conduct. The ballots in question were presented to the voters by mail, and they had a significant period of time, 2 weeks, from May 24th, 2010 until May 14th, 2010 to May 28th, 2010, to have the ballots in their actual physical possession before they returned the ballot to the NLRB for counting.
There were two votes, weren't there?
There were two votes.
Was this the second vote?
This was the second vote of a rerun vote of the first vote that had ended in a tie.
So theoretically, they voted once already.
They voted once already, but actually, I believe that vote was in person, Your Honor. That was not a mail vote. And what happened in that vote, although I'm not sure the record is exactly clear on it, is that there wasn't 100% voter turnout. And so there was concern about disenfranchising potential voters based upon their geographic location. And the parties and the region of the NLRB agreed that it would then, the second rerun would be mail ballot vote.
But was the rerun different in that they had to choose between the two unions as opposed to a third option of no union?
Correct, okay. Your Honor. In the first vote, the ballot actually had three choices, Teamsters Local 705, Teamsters Local 710, or no union. The runoff vote then is a runoff between the two top vote getters in that case. In that case, there was a tie, and it was rerun again. The third choice then was off the ballot. No union was off the ballot.
But so then isn't that the result if we were to grant? What is the result, I guess, if we were to grant your appeal?
The result could be one of two things. Mm-hmm. Either it could be determined that it was a tie and there is no union, or the board has the authority and the ability to order a third rerun. There's no reason legally, statutorily, or otherwise that the board could not, particularly as we noted in our brief, under the unique circumstances of this case and the unique circumstances of this ballot, there's no reason why another vote couldn't have been held. It simply is an internal board, apparently, policy, so to speak, that in the event of a rerun that ends in a tie, there will not be a third vote held. But that is not to say that there was anything that precluded that from happening. In fact, we contend this is such a unique case based upon the ballot itself, that's exactly what could have happened. Another vote could have and should have been instructed and ordered. There's no reason why it couldn't. The board has the absolute right to set that as a policy or as a precedent, particularly under these circumstances. The voters were instructed in this case, Your Honors, to return the spoiled ballot to the NLRB if there was a spoiled ballot for a new one. That's right on the ballot. That's right in the ballot instructions that you'll see. The hearing officer in this case determined that the use of a highlighter to shade over one of the X's that had been made, quote, appears to be the voter's attempt to obliterate, close quote, and that, quote, these markings indicate that the voter changed his mind, close quote. That's in Joint Appendix at page 52. As we pointed out in our brief, the obliteration line of cases do not, under established board principles and policies, apply where the X, as it is in this case, is visible to the naked eye in both boxes. And here we have a situation where it's particularly true where the obliteration cases that the hearing officer and the board relied upon involve the use of a dark pen to smudge over and completely obliterate, literally wipe away, as the dictionary would define obliterate, one of the X's so that it's not visible to the naked eye. In our case, it's visible to the naked eye, and to follow the obliteration cases simply deviates without any explanation from established board policies and established board precedent. The fact that the highlighter was used, and a highlighter, by definition, is used to draw attention to something, not to obliterate. The fact that the highlighter was used simply cannot be equated with the notion that somehow the voter changed their mind or that somehow the voter appears to have attempted to have obliterated. Those were conclusions reached by the hearing officer without any evidence in the record. In fact, the law is very clear for very good reasons. The anonymity of the voter is protected. So there's no way the voter in this case, or in any other board case, is going to be asked what they intended by this marking. So therefore, unless it's patently clear, as we say in this circuit, unless the voter's intent is clear, the ballot is ambiguous, and it is therefore not to be counted.
Now, the hearing officer did discuss all the obliteration cases, didn't he?
The hearing officer did discuss the obliteration cases, and our point is that by following the obliteration cases, she deviates from the precedent. The precedent is actually, as we pointed out...
Is there a highlight case?
There is not a...
Well, then how do you deviate from precedent, Mr. Schwartz?
Well, if you have an obliteration cases deal only with actually obliterating,
I appreciate that, why is it a deviation? I mean, it may be an error, and I appreciate also your position on that. But it isn't as if whatever law existed the hearing officer didn't address, and the board obviously accepted the hearing officer.
Yeah, you're correct, Your Honor. It's not as if they didn't address the obliteration cases. In fact, they...
You just found them analogous, and you're suggesting that's an error, obviously.
Suggesting that's an error, and in fact, the Sadler Brothers case or the Mercy Hospital case that the hearing officer also pointed out are actually the cases that apply. They're the ambiguous ballot cases. You have to go one of two ways with the case, Your Honor. It's either an ambiguous ballot or it's an obliterated ballot. And we concede if it's an obliterated ballot, then the ballot should have been counted. But this is not the case, nor do any previous cases indicate that this should even be remotely considered an obliterated ballot. When both X's are visible, and they are in this case, and in fact one of them is highlighted, we would say that's an ambiguous ballot.
So you would say this attempt, whatever it was, is no different than... a voter circling the box.
It could very well be that. We don't know. But that's certainly an analogous, or drawing an arrow to the box, or putting a star next to the box. But in any case, with that in that side of the box and an X in the other side, you have an ambiguous ballot. And to discern or conclude otherwise is unsupported by the record and clearly an aberration and a deviation from established board precedents.
Because this is a mail-in ballot, this little note here, it says, don't sign, stop, fold, and drop in the pocket. If you spoil this ballot, return it to the board agent for a new one. Obviously, if it's a mail-in, you can't do that.
Well, there are instructions, Your Honor, in the mailing that the voter receives over how to return it with the envelope and what to do and who to contact if there are issues or questions with spoilation.
Well, I assume that's harder than walking out and saying, here's my rec ballot, give me another one.
99% of the time, someone would appear from the voter's private box, curtain, and appear and say to the board agent, I wrecked this ballot, can I have another one? The board would then inspect it to ensure that, and that would happen. In this case, it didn't, though. And we believe that the 2 weeks that the voter had the ballot raises all of the kinds of issues that are suspect as to the ambiguity of the ballot.
The board argues for deference here. to its view. What's your response?
If the board had not abused the discretion that it is granted, we would say they should be granted that. But in this particular situation, without any rational explanation for why, when you have a case where and even the hearing officer concedes that both X's are visible to the naked eye, to then go down the obliteration cases, we think shouldn't be awarded any deference.
What if the board takes a position anything other than a clear X is obliteration? That's just a policy that they have. Suppose that had been, this is the third case, not the first case, Mr. Schwartz.
If that,
but you came up here with the same argument, saying they were wrong in those two. Would you say we would be compelled to, or would you acknowledge, I guess, I'll give you time for rebuttal.
Thank you. Let me make sure I understand your question.
Suppose that the board had two cases before, where basically the same thing happened. Somebody, they believe, tried to obliterate by a highlighter, which allowed, though, for the projection of the X still to come forward. And you came, and you come to us today saying it's the third case, but not the first case.
I understand.
I'd have
a harder time today, Your Honor. No doubt about it.
I mean, they would establish that's obliteration. So I guess I'm asking you, is it possible for us to view that this is the start of their new policy of considering any covering of the X obliteration? That's just their position. You and I might have a different view of that.
If the board had actually said that in their decision, which is very scant in terms of its actual logic or reasoning as to why it adopted it, if the board had said that henceforth we adopt a rule that says the darker X wins, so to speak, then I would say we're in a difficult situation in terms of what deference, as Your Honor asked, we should be granting. But that's not what they said, nor did they even come close. And so I would like to reserve something for whatever I may have.
I'll give you additional time, Mr. Schwartz.
Thank you, Your
Honor. Ms. Lancia?
May it please the Court. I'm here today seeking enforcement of the board's order finding that the company, Ruan Transport, failed and refused to bargain with the properly certified union. As this court is aware, the dispositive issue in this case is whether the board abused its discretion in interpreting the challenge ballot as a vote for Local 705. And to explain that standard of review, unless this court finds that the board's conclusion in interpreting the ballot was unreasonable, it must defer to the board's interpretation. And we submit that the board's conclusion was not unreasonable. As the hearing officer pointed out, the voter may have attempted to obliterate the mark in the Local 710 box by coloring over it with a purple colored marker, attempting to match the color of that box to the color of the original ballot, even though it may not exactly match. And the hearing officer also noted that there was a dark black X left untouched remaining in the Local 705 box. And based on board precedent, including Abtex, Brooks Brothers, and Metaplex involving attempted erasures or obliterations, the hearing officer's conclusion that the remaining X signified the voter's intended and final choice is not unreasonable. Now, to address counsel's point about the board's quote-unquote scant decision, it does not present any authority requiring the board to rewrite findings that it adopts by the hearing officer. In fact, in its exceptions and brief in support of exceptions to the board in the representation case, it asked the board to consider the original ballot and to refer to it as Board Exhibit 2. In the decision and certification of representative representation, the board did refer to the original ballot as Board Exhibit 2 and stated that it reviewed the record, which includes the ballot, in light of the exceptions and briefs, which would include the company's and the board's arguments. So the board was not required to give any more detail than it did in affirming the hearing officer's findings in her report, which were clearly detailed and accurate in terms of describing the hot pink ballot paper and the purple highlighter. So we ask this court to find that the board did not deviate from its precedent here. I believe Your Honor noted that these
cases have a highlighter issue.
Exactly. These cases are very fact-specific, and we believe that the Supreme Court and this court, as well as Congress, has recognized that the board's expertise is in these types of matters. It is in conducting elections and in determining voters' intent as to which representative or the lack thereof they seek to choose.
Well, that, how could they be any more expert than anybody who's simply looking at the ballot and applying the law, which I think we're capable of doing as well?
Yes, this court is definitely capable of viewing the ballot and considering whether the board's interpretation was unreasonable. However, because of the board's expertise in labor relations generally and holding, conducting elections and its familiarity with many employers, not particularly this one, but many employers' attempts to delay employees' choice of a representative by technically refusing to bargain in order to contest the election as it did here, the board is aware of its precedent and very familiar with its precedent on how to determine voter intent and which way an attempted obliteration may manifest itself and will cut in a particular case.
But if there aren't any highlighter cases, how can the board have any expertise?
Because it has established clear guidelines, which is giving effect to voter intent when it is clear. And a means for doing that, as we've noted, involves attempted obliterations or erasures. And because of the standard of review here, if the board, as it did, looks at this ballot and considers and determines that the voter intended to somehow cover up that mark and return that box to the color of the original ballot and yet left alone the other box and submitted the ballot, obviously intending for a vote to be counted, the board was not unreasonable in,
let me ask you this,
in interpreting the ballot as such and thus did not abuse its discretion.
Let me ask you this question. Suppose a voter puts two X's in originally.
Yes.
And then decides to highlight. Mm-hmm. I'm using that as just the physical act, not an interpretation, as we often do, that's to bring forward a greater recognition. Would it be unreasonable if a hearing officer decided that it was the intent of the voter to underscore that X as opposed to the X that's left clean, not obliterated, but would that have been, could that have been a position a hearing officer could have taken that would not be labeled unreasonable?
I suppose the hearing officer could have viewed it that way, perhaps relying more on the line of cases such as Sadler Brothers or Mercy College, which involved blackouts and heavy shading in the same exact color of the pen used to mark the X in the first place. But whereas here, since it was a mail-in ballot, the voter did not just shade in that box, which had an X. He or she went through, obviously, to great lengths to try to obliterate that mark. And instead of just saying, well, maybe I don't want my vote counted, maybe I want it ambiguous, in which case I wouldn't mail it in the first place, they tried to at least get rid of that mark and marked a dark, distinct X in the local 705 box. And because it involves this case and this type of case involves looking at the ballot and considering it in light of past cases, meaning the board's established guidelines with respect to interpreting ballots, it's difficult to say whether that would have been unreasonable. But before us today, before the court today, the board's interpretation here was not unreasonable. That is to say, even if this court, looking at the ballot, disagrees with the board, perhaps finds that maybe the highlighter was used as a highlighter, if the court believes that the board was at least reasonable in its interpretation, despite disagreeing with the board, it still must defer to the board's interpretation.
Is this copied? Is this look like
that the original, or is that if so that's in the appendix? Yes, and if you'll note, the original is actually particularly instructive and really supports the board's conclusions because that paper is more of a baby pink,
right.
And
well,
the ballot is actually a hot pink. So it, yeah.
I've examined the original.
Right, I have as well. How does the finding here square with Mercy College? Where the court held that if either of the boxes, looking at them in and of themselves, would constitute a valid vote, if we only had the box on the right, would the board have counted it?
Well, in that case, what was particularly distinctive about that case is that the voter used a black pen to mark the X and also I guess, used a black pen to shade in the box containing another X, in which so you have a dark marked-in box and an X, which would seem to cancel each other out. And the board in that case specifically found that there were no attempts at obliteration. Whereas here, the voter did not simply use the same pen that it used to he or she used to mark the X in the local 705 box. He or she actually went to great lengths, as I said earlier, to find some type of a marker to try to match that box to the original color of the ballot, and didn't circle it saying this one or not this one. I understand that that may present some concern to the court that there were other courses of action available as to what the voter could have done to signify more clearly what his or her vote was. But as the board said in Brooks Brothers, it is unnecessary for the board to consider that alternative courses of action were available, because then it's just engaging in speculation as to what may or may not have happened, could or could not have happened.
When you say they went to great lengths, aren't you speculating? How do we know they didn't just happen to have that highlighter there, or a kid with a set of highlighters?
I know I personally don't have a purple marker or highlighter, so that's why I say it appears. As the hearing officer noted as well, it's hard to say definitely what the voter did or did not do. So the language of attempts and appears to obliterate is particularly useful. Here it appears that instead of using maybe a yellow highlighter to highlight, the voter tried to find a color that would match the color of the original ballot.
Yellow and orange are acceptable and purple is not.
No, Your Honor. What this case is about is whether the board's interpretation of the ballot as a vote for local 705 was unreasonable. And if this court finds that the board did not abuse its discretion, then Local 705 will become the exclusive certified bargaining representative of the employees, and employees should not be delayed any longer in their choice of a collective bargaining representative. Thank you.
Thank you, Matthew. Schwartz, you may have an additional 2 minutes.
Thank you very much, Your Honors. Just real briefly, the law in this circuit is clear, as we noted in our briefs. The intention of the voter must be free from doubt. The intention of the voter must be free from doubt. In this case, we have counsel for the NLRB conceding that the hearing officer said it may have been an attempt to obliterate. We have questions regarding speculation as to how the purple highlighter came into play, at what great lengths or not the voter had to go to do that. What did the voter intend by highlighting that? As opposed to the obliteration cases, where it's very clear what the voter intended, because the X in one box is not visible. It's been obliterated. In our case, the X is visible in both boxes. So for the board's expertise, quote unquote, to be deferred to, they must follow their precedents. And they must follow their line of cases that say obliteration only applies if we can't see an X in one of the boxes. And in here you can see an X in both of the boxes. This is an ambiguous ballot where the intention of the voter is not free from doubt. So on that basis, Your Honor, we would seek that our petition be granted. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Schwartz. Thank you, Ms. Lancia. Case is taken under advisement.